Hello and welcome to the Spartan Spirit podcast, where we analyze what's best for the West. Today, we're looking at a once-in-a-generation strategic shift in the defense posture of the Western world, whereby Australia, United Kingdom, and United States formed the AUKUS partnership. We'll be discussing the impact of government policies and misinformation on the modern Western world. We'll look at relevant research and take a tough-minded approach drawn from the roots of the Western world, ancient Sparta. In other words, a stoic and pragmatic society-first mindset. Hence the notion of the Spartan spirit. My aim is to awaken the Spartan spirit in you so that you can play your part in challenging and correcting misguided policies and practices that weaken the West, even if all that means is that you talk to your friends about what you've heard here today. I'm your host, Bill Kourouliakos. I'm a retired senior Royal Australian Air Force officer. Welcome, and I hope you enjoy the show. On 15 September 2021, the Three Eyes Nations, Australia, United Kingdom, and United States, forged a partnership called AUKUS. It's a five-letter acronym, AUKUS. In the words of the government press releases on that day, it is an enhanced trilateral security partnership focused on the Indo-Pacific region. To be blunt, it's about deterring Chinese aggression in the Indo-Pacific. And reading between the lines, that includes the main point of contention, defending Taiwan. Today on the Spartan Spirit podcast, we are discussing the AUKUS partnership, why it came to be, and its components. We'll continue the AUKUS discussion on the next episode by taking an in-depth look at its main feature, the provision of nuclear-powered submarines to Australia. Let's start off with the geopolitical situation that led to the AUKUS partnership. There were a few factors weighing on the three partners. In the United Kingdom, the British exit from the European Economic Community led Britain to look for new trading partners. The Indo-Pacific was a natural place to look because it is growing rapidly in economic terms. It is therefore in the United Kingdom's interest to ensure there is stability in the Indo-Pacific. Secondly, Australia was a natural trading partner to turn to because of their historical ties. Another factor influencing the United Kingdom was that their submarine capability was in need of a refresh, i.e., they were looking at building a new class of submarine anyway. In the United States, there were several factors at play. The United States does about 40% of its trade across the Pacific Ocean. Any war in the Western Pacific would cause a major downturn in their economy. Therefore, the United States also has a vested interest in maintaining peace in the Indo-Pacific. Of course, as the world's predominant superpower, the U.S. maintains a global presence, and they seek to deter aggression and governments that are acting contrary to the U.S. national interest. To do that, they have a large military presence in the Indo-Pacific, commanded by a four-star officer in Indo-Pacific Command, which is more commonly referred to as PACOM. With China's rising military power and expanding influence, PACOM is at the forefront of deterring Chinese aggression and preparing for conflict in the Indo-Pacific. We need to take a short detour here and answer this question. What is the risk of conflict with China? And why should the Three Eyes Nations care? Well, let's hear what China's President Xi has to say about Taiwan. And this is a quote. "No one should underestimate the Chinese people's staunch determination, firm will, and strong ability to defend national sovereignty and territorial integrity. The historical task of the complete reunification of the motherland must be fulfilled and will definitely be fulfilled. And we reserve the option of taking all measures necessary." I'll also point out that China is actively pursuing recognition of its right to control the entire South China Sea. China's burgeoning aspirations in the Indo-Pacific first became apparent in the early 2010s when it began to build islands inside the Nine Dashed Line. To understand what the Nine Dashed Line is, I suggest you read Bill Hayton's South China Sea. It's an outstanding account of why this area is in dispute. Now, I know that this might just be saber-rattling from China, but there are a lot of experts, many of whom would have access to classified intelligence on the matter, who are taking this very seriously. For example, in March 2021, in other words, in the lead-up to the AUKUS announcement, PACOM's commander, Admiral Philip Davidson, told the Senate Armed Services Committee, and this is a quote, "The threat is manifest during this decade, in fact, in the next 6 years." This timing coincides with China's intent to be capable of taking Taiwan by 2027. That is another stated aim of theirs. And it is backed up by many China experts, such as the ex-Australian Prime Minister Kevin Rudd, who's written about this. And he still believes that China intends to invade Taiwan. Of course, no one knows when or if China might attack Taiwan or other countries, but it is certainly within the realm of possibilities, and many would say probabilities. As such, and given the U.S.'s commitment to the region, particularly Taiwan, it is in the U.S.'s interest to bolster capabilities in the region. The U.S. is also interested in a new submarine class because the Virginia-class, its primary attack submarine, will be time-expired by the 2040s, and it needs a new submarine. It's also looking at submarine production capacity. Finally, the U.S. has many close strategic and military ties with Australia and sees Australia as a geopolitically critical nation to supporting U.S. national interests in the Indo-Pacific. Hence, the AUKUS partnership was another way of shoring up that relationship. From Australia's perspective, there was much to be gained from the AUKUS partnership. By 2020, it was clear to Australia that their deal with France to purchase the French-designed attack-class submarine was mired in difficulty, and doubts were being raised about the French submarine's suitability for operations far from Australia's shores. In other words, there were reasons to consider nuclear-powered submarines. Also in the early 2020s, China imposed a number of crippling trade sanctions on Australia. This had two effects. Firstly, the Australian public took notice of how belligerent China could become, and they supported the Australian government's hardline approach in responding to these Chinese trade sanctions. This drove Australia even closer to the United States in a strategic sense. Concurrently, China began to court the small island nations that were historically considered in Australia's sphere of influence, such as the Solomon Islands and Papua New Guinea, amongst many others. It became apparent that China was investing heavily in some of these countries. This unsettled Australians and once again demonstrated that China could influence Australia's immediate region. With the rise of a Chinese threat to its trade and regional stability, Australia realized it needed to rethink its defense posture, and it initiated the Defense Strategic Review in 2022. In 2023, this review resulted in a major reshaping of the Australian Defense Force's structure so that it could operate with a forward posture, i.e., conduct combat far from its shores, and in particular, in a maritime and littoral environment. That's code for the South China Sea. In summary, the timing was right. The AUKUS nations all had good reason to band together and come up with a strategy for deterring China in the Indo-Pacific region. Now that we have an inkling of the logic behind the AUKUS partnership, we'll discuss the components of AUKUS and we'll work through them in this order. First, the partnership and whether it makes sense to have established a partnership from the strategic perspective. Then we'll look at the two main components of AUKUS, i.e. cooperation across a range of technological advancements and the provision of nuclear-powered submarines for Australia. There are other elements that we could talk about, such as defense industry integration, but we'll leave that for some future podcast. And we'll conclude by considering what the next steps for AUKUS might be to make it an even more effective deterrent to Chinese expansion. Looking at the AUKUS partnership, it is clearly aimed at deterring any Chinese aggression or expansion in the Indo-Pacific region. Numerous articles appeared in the media supporting or criticizing the AUKUS partnership as a strategy. I'll highlight some of these. Let's start with one in Defense Connect, which you can find online. In fact, they produced two articles, which, when read together, do a great job of spelling out why the West should be deterring Chinese expansion. The first is titled, Embracing the Novel Key to Shaping Better National Security Choices, Lowy Institute. Looking at AUKUS from the Australian perspective, this article details Australia's geopolitical past and rightly points out its many economic and strategic concerns, which in turn drive Australia's need to have security partners that are capable of countering Chinese expansion. And there really is only one nation that can do that, the United States. It also makes the point that the history of United Kingdom, US, and Australian strategic defense relationships in the Indo-Pacific is central to why AUKUS makes sense. These three countries share history and have a common view of what a rules-based global order should look like, i.e. AUKUS is a natural outcome of their histories and shared values. The second article in Defense Connect is Stephen Cooper's How Does Australia Turn the Tide in a New Cold War? This is a great account of the power plays that are happening across the world between the major powers and some of their allies. I don't agree with some of it because it's very negative on the future of U.S. power, an issue I'll cover in a few minutes, but it does a good job of highlighting some key points. I'll start with this quote from Cooper. Beijing's influence, peddling, and expansionist ambitions in the Pacific coupled with the new scramble for Africa and the mounting economic, strategic, and political partnerships established through new multilateral international organizations such as BRICS, as an aside, that's Brazil, Russia, India, China, are gradually stepping up their assault on the global order. In other words, Western nations and their views on a rules-based global order are under threat. This was well captured by Australia's Foreign Minister Penny Wong, who said, "We need to understand what is being competed for, that it is more than great power rivalry, and is in fact nothing less than a contest over the way our region and our world works." Ladies and gentlemen, if that doesn't get you thinking about geopolitics, nothing will. In essence, Western nations have to choose sides. In Australia, the UK, and US have chosen the side of the West, which is only natural given our shared values and history. Cooper also commented on trade, saying, "The harsh realities of conflict are the reality of rationing for food, energy, medical supplies, or luxury goods, and few people understanding the socio-political and economic impact such rationing would have on the Australian standard of living. The issue for Australia is that any long-term disruption to the sea lines of communication, sea trade, would bring the Australian economy to its knees in a matter of months, if not weeks, because many of its essential goods come into the country on ships that transit through areas that China could interdict. I'd say the same is true for Japan and South Korea. China is already talking about inspecting ships that transit through the South China Sea. And I'd add that we need to consider the defense of Taiwan as an issue. It's a democratic nation of over 20 million people and deserves our support, as does the Ukraine, by the way. Taiwan is also important because it produces much critical product for the world, such as microchips, and we all know how important they are. There is one other article that is outstanding for understanding what AUKUS is and isn't. It's another Australian article, this time by Michael Shoebridge, writing for Australian Strategic Policy Institute, ASPI, in an article titled, "What is AUKUS and What Is It Not? How Does It Connect to the Quad, the Sydney Dialogue, ASEAN, and Indo-Pacific Security?" It's about 6 to 7 pages long, but it's well worth the time to read. Some key takeaways are, first, AUKUS is a partnership, not an alliance. There have been many articles written about U.S. expectations of Australia in exchange for nuclear-powered submarine technology, and they often cite the lack of a formal alliance coming out of AUKUS. For example, the Lowy Institute's article called "The Big AUKUS Question That Albanese Has Yet to Answer." For our American and British listeners, Albanese is the Prime Minister of Australia. It's an article that attempts to scare its readers into being anti-AUKUS by raising doubts about the U.S.'s commitment to the Indo-Pacific and the U.S.'s military capability. This is a classic case of putting out opinion that isn't backed up with facts. Worse yet, be careful when you read statements coming out of articles like that. Here's an example, quote, "The U.S. is no more militarily committed to defending its leadership in Asia today than it was before AUKUS was launched," end quote. Interesting quote. I would say that the U.S. is very militarily committed to the Indo-Pacific. Just look at how many forces they have in the region. Also, you just need to accept a few basic facts to realize this assertion is totally false. For example, there's been a recent U.S.-Philippine security agreement. One of the largest U.S. Marine Corps deployments is ongoing right now in Australia in Darwin. There's a huge exercise, in fact, the largest that it's ever been, which is Exercise Talisman Sabre, a joint Australian Defence Force and U.S. military exercise, and it's being held in 2023. In other words, there's plenty of evidence to say that that quote out of the Lowy Institute is just plain wrong. The article went on to say, quote, "Australia is dealing itself into a contest that is not vital for our national interest, but which could spark the most destructive war in human history and one that the U.S. is poised to lose." Talk about inflammatory statements. They're really just trying to get people going. It's unsubstantiated opinion intended to worry the Australian public and to cast doubt about Australia's most important ally. Australia has no alternative to its partnership with the U.S. other than to acquiesce to China's domination. And how can one think that a U.S.-Chinese conflict is not in Australia's national interest? Of course it is. China is not going to thank Australia for staying out of a U.S.-China conflict. Rather, they're just going to lump Australia in with the U.S. and strike out at both militaries and economies. Furthermore, even if Taiwan fell into Chinese hands, that does not mean that the U.S. has lost. Do we just walk away from nations as the dominoes fall? We'd all be speaking Japanese now if that attitude was used. Let's not let this cancerous media permeate the West's thinking. Interestingly, that article offers no alternatives to a U.S. alliance and ignores the many threads in the U.S. media about their shifting strategy and their focus on the Indo-Pacific, such as this article titled "A New American Grand Strategy to Counter Russia and China." It was written in the Wall Street Journal, and it highlights the many threads that the U.S. strategy might take in the near future to focus in on this region. Back to Shoebridge's Aspie article. He wrote about facilitating technological advancements under AUKUS when he said, AUKUS also needs to be, quote, a trilateral that's bringing into being three other joint trilaterals in each of our nations, between our governments, our research organizations, and our companies, including tech firms outside the traditional defense sector, end quote. Shoebridge was spot on here. We need a whole of alliance and whole of enterprise approach to deter China. This would take some really creative leadership from all three nations. I suggest it should be something along the lines of the highly effective joint agency task force implemented by Tony Abbott's government in 2013 under Operation Sovereign Borders to stop illegal immigration. It worked a treat. Was a fantastic way of bringing different departments together and to focus them in on one outcome. But we just need to do it on an international scale. Petty arguments about who would be in charge of such an agency just need to be put to rest. They don't matter in the context of an existential crisis. Shoebridge also noted that then Defense Minister Dutton had that existential crisis in mind when he canvassed for expanded air, maritime, and broader force posture cooperation, saying, quote, if that includes basing and includes the storage of different ordnances, I think that is in Australia's best interest, end quote. Dutton was right to raise these points because if AUKUS nations are going to get into a war, we need every advantage we can muster. Unfortunately, there is a hesitation in Australia about accepting U.S. leadership or U.S. forces on Australian soil, aircraft, or ships. This is ridiculous. If war comes to the Indo-Pacific region, Australians will very quickly brush aside any discomfort at U.S. leadership in a heartbeat. This hesitation about U.S. influence comes from some anti-U.S. bias in Australia. A classic example of this appeared in an article by James Curran, who is a professor of history at Sydney University, and he wrote an article called AUKUS is Setting Up Australia to be a U.S. Auxiliary in War Over Taiwan. This article is a classic case, taking snippets of information and twisting them to suit the author's opinion. Curran's assertion about U.S. intentions to draw Australia into a war with Taiwan and his comments about Australian subservience give away his anti-U.S. bias. He presents this biased opinion because he's pandering to the element of Australian society that is averse to U.S. influence in Australia. And those who deride Australia's relationship with the U.S. are dismissing decades of security partnership, and they fail to offer any alternative security solution to an expansionist China. The West's desire for free trade and a global's rule-based order requires us to band together. The heart of that alliance is the U.S. We need historians like Curran to paint the full picture, not just little snippets that he wants to pick on, and not some revisionist version of what history is and ignoring history. He's a historian, for Pete's sake. He should be telling the whole story. Perhaps Curran should move to Russia, where they are eager to publish revisionist histories. From the U.S. side of things, they would probably jump at the opportunity to base more equipment and personnel in Australia. And I sincerely hope that the plans for basing U.S. and British submarines, bombers, and more troops in Australia come to fruition. At the time that AUKUS was announced, the United Kingdom also hinted at operating assets out of Australia. But since then, only one British ship has been in Australian waters, and one wonders how committed the British are to deploying forces in Australia. Interestingly, from the British perspective, there's a good article that talks about the United Kingdom's motivation for AUKUS. The International Institute for Strategic Studies wrote an article called United Kingdom Commitment to the Indo-Pacific. In that article, they noted that while British politicians are enthusiastic about AUKUS, one can't help but wonder if it's more about the economic benefit the UK will get from the Australian acquisition of UK-built and designed submarines. And I think they're right. We should be questioning that. This question has to come to mind when you consider the United Kingdom's strategic circumstances. There is a reason why the United Kingdom is the second biggest contributor to supplying the Ukraine after the US, and that is that Russia is far more of a threat to the United Kingdom's stability than China. Let's hope that the Brits hold up their end of the bargain when it comes to the Indo-Pacific. Time now to look at the two components of AUKUS, albeit briefly, because they will each feature as a topic of their own in future Spartan Spirit episodes. One part relates to technology enhancements. These include advanced military capabilities, such as artificial intelligence-enabled and autonomous capabilities, in particular, robotic and autonomous undersea systems. Think about unmanned underwater weapons and surveillance systems, such as a device that could be sailed underwater to an enemy harbor, parked there for a long time, and then activated to attack when the time is ripe. They're also working on quantum computing projects on precision navigation and timing. There's an acronym for that called PNT, and it has to do with navigation and super accurate navigation, which is required for super accurate weapons delivery. Also, cyber warfare, hypersonics and counter-hypersonic technology. This is really important because hypersonic missiles are being invented, in fact, exist right now. They fly at very high speeds, Mach 5 or 6, which equates to somewhere around 3 to 4,000 miles per hour, or call that 7,000 kilometers per hour. They're very hard to shoot down, and we need to develop technology that can do that. Electronic warfare is always important, and other technological innovation and information sharing efforts. The faster we can share information about the battle space, the more likely it is that we'll make our decisions before the enemy makes their decisions, and that's called getting inside the OODA loop. Getting inside the OODA loop is really critical for beating your enemy in a fast-paced war. To get a sense of what research is being done in the U.S., you could look at Defense News. It's a U.S. site. They published an article covering the work of Heidi Shu, who's the Undersecretary of Defense for Research and Engineering. And it highlights that they are working with Australia and the United Kingdom in developing experimentation on all-domain command and control and contested logistics, both of which are going to be very critical in an Indo-Pacific conflict. Better yet, there's an article by Lauren Kahn on the CFR.org website called "The AUKUS Alliance Has a Lot More to Offer Than Submarines." And she did an outstanding job of highlighting the potential this part of AUKUS has to offer. In short, she covered the benefits of working with allies like the United Kingdom and Australia. Remember, this is written from the U.S. perspective. Particularly because they are sometimes able to work much faster in delivering new innovation than the U.S. is. She highlighted how quickly Australia was able to take some U.S. technology and develop the Ghost Shark drone. And that's one of those autonomous submersibles I was speaking about earlier, which can deliver a weapon underwater unknowingly to your enemy's harbor. This is because the U.S. system of arms control can be laborious and difficult to navigate, even for Five Eyes or Three Eyes nations who already have access to U.S. secrets. She particularly called out the U.S. International Traffic in Arms Regulations, and the acronym there is called ITARS, as being a hindrance. She's right. Having worked with the U.S. on secret programs, I'm all too familiar with the bureaucratic nature of the U.S. arms world. It can take years to get access to critical information or equipment. To be successful, AUKUS needs to find a way around ITARS. And as Lauren pointed out, AUKUS needs a coordinated approach to delivering these technologies because they could be game changers for the West, but we need to hurry up and get these programs moving. As for submarines, an Indo-Pacific war that threatens United States, United Kingdom, and Australian interests is one that involves security threats to the seaborne trade. Clearly, everyone is focused on the South China Sea and Taiwan. If you want to stop somebody from invading islands or Taiwan, it's simple. Sink their ships. Under AUKUS, Australia will acquire 8 conventionally armed nuclear power attack submarines. The first 3 to 5 are planned to be the U.S. Virginia-class attack submarines. While these are being built and delivered, the AUKUS nations will design and build a U.K. sub replacement called the AUKUS sub. The intention is that the U.K. will get the first of these, and then Australia will build its own fleet of this type, which means 2 production lines outside of the United States. The AUKUS sub is to have a U.S. reactor and the U.S. combat system, which is good for commonality. Having a 3rd nuclear submarine production facility in the Western Alliance can only be a good thing in deterring our adversaries. While this work is underway, the United States and United Kingdom intend to operate nuclear attack submarines from yet-to-be-built bases in Australia. Australia has allocated a lot of money to build these bases, so that's a good sign. There are many issues to deal with when considering the nuclear submarines for Australia, such as Australia's capacity to develop a nuclear industry, the building of the bases for both visiting submarines and Australia's future fleet, the extension of the Collins-class submarine, which is Australia's aging conventionally powered fleet. How Australia will crew so many submarines is a really good question. Nuclear fuel storage and the building of submarines in Australia, to say the least. I don't see any of these as being insurmountable. After all, if you have the Spartan spirit in you, you will find a way. Unfortunately, the Australian submarines won't be ready until the 2030s, i.e., they aren't an immediate deterrent to Chinese expansion. And this brings me to the last component of today's podcast. AUKUS is a message. It's a message to China that they cannot simply act unilaterally across the Indo-Pacific without repercussions when they impose themselves in the West sphere. But it's not a clear message. The joint press release from the three leaders of AUKUS left much to be desired. The Australian version barely mentioned the threat that led to the AUKUS partnership, and here's what it says. Quote, "We believe in a world that protects freedom and respects human rights, the rule of law, the independence of sovereign states, and the rules-based international order. The steps we are announcing today will help us to advance these mutually beneficial objectives in the decades to come." And the UK and US versions were not much different. If this wasn't such a serious issue, the language is so soft as to be laughable. The AUKUS partnership is obviously about deterring Chinese expansion, yet it lacks one of the key components of deterrence, which is clear strategic communication. You must let your adversary know what you intend to do. AUKUS must be completely transparent with no room for misjudging the West's intent, because any sign of weakness could lead China to believe that they can act with impunity. This has happened before in the past, and we talked about this in the previous podcast about Iraq attacking Kuwait and Russia attacking the Ukraine because they weren't expecting anything serious to happen in reply. The leaders' press release was a chance for clear messaging about Western national security aims, and the AUKUS leaders failed to get that right. I'd say they should have made it abundantly clear that we will sink all Chinese traffic between China and Taiwan in the event of an attack on Taiwan. Perhaps the AUKUS leaders should have consulted with Peter Jennings. He nailed it when he wrote an article for The Australian called "Keep Calm and Carry On Won't Stop Beijing's Ambition." In it, he lambasted Australia's foreign minister, Penny Wong, for continuing to use soft language in relation to the strategic messaging she is using towards China. He correctly states that AUKUS was the signal that should have aligned Australia firmly in the US camp. Instead, she's got a foot in both camps. I highly recommend you read it. Aside from the soft language, AUKUS didn't go far enough in practical terms either. The AUKUS partnership simply does not deliver combat capability in the short term. There isn't any substantial short-term enhancement of the West's military capabilities to counter China in the Indo-Pacific. If Australia, the US, and UK were serious about deterring China in the short term, then the US, and possibly UK, should have repositioned forces, probably into Australia's north or to the island nations in the region, any of those that would take them. Well, let's put it this way, those that haven't already sold themselves to China. And Australia's defense review would not simply have shuffled the defense budget around. Australia cut army capabilities, shifted priorities to the maritime and littoral domains, along with some emphasis on long-range strike, but they failed to increase the defense budget or increase the size of the defense force markedly. Ask yourself this question. If you think you're going to get into a war, wouldn't you bolster your defenses, not simply realign them? It's like facing Germany in World War II and moving a division from one side of Belgium to the other. It doesn't matter. You really need to increase your capability here. Finally, AUKUS is a partnership. And as such, there is a message inherent in that partnership. It shows China that the Three Eyes nations, United States, United Kingdom, and Australia, are as resolute in their alliance as they have always been. But there is a negative side to that aspect of the messaging. AUKUS only has three partners signed onto the program. That's understandable when you consider the nuclear submarine technology that we're talking about sharing amongst the three. But it's not understandable when you think about what it's going to take to deter China. The West will be far stronger if AUKUS and their partners, such as South Korea, Japan, India, some Southeast Asian nations, Canada, New Zealand, present a united political front and united enhanced military capability. There's a good article that discusses this concept. It's by Leone and Zinieres called "To Exclude or Not to Exclude, AUKUS and Order Engineering." It's not a paper on engineering, by the way. The article is a critique of the strategy underpinning AUKUS. The key message being, and I'll quote here, "At a time when the U.S. is seeking to draw existing allies closer to its sphere of influence, the rationale of AUKUS is one of exclusion, that is, a coalition-building project around strategic technology development formed by three partners. This exclusive approach has clear benefits for Washington, Canberra, and London. However, there are risks to this approach if the trio aspire to be seen as legitimate actors in the region rather than as external hegemonic players. In other words, AUKUS looks very imperialistic and does not bolster alliances as a deterrence other than amongst the three nations. It thus argues that AUKUS is a limited initiative." There was also an article, which is well worth reading, by a Canadian think tank called Conference of Defense Associations, which published The Taiwan Strait, What Can Canada Do? In it, they echoed these sentiments about a broader AUKUS alliance, but they took it one step further and suggested the need for an integrated defense industry that can deliver capabilities quickly. These two articles are on the money. If we're serious about deterring China, then AUKUS needs to be bigger. More allies, more weapons, better integration. I'm sure Japan, Canada, New Zealand, Singapore, and South Korea would be on board. And with their economic might, we could probably figure out a way to stop China from sailing their fleet for Taiwan. That's a wrap for today. A war with China would be bloody, and all sides would take many casualties. Those who would counter Chinese aggression would suffer great losses and would need a defense industry to replace those equipment losses. We don't want this war. That's why I'm a fan of AUKUS. It told the world that the preeminent Western powers are on alert and are working to deter Chinese expansion. Yes, AUKUS needs more work. Yes, it needs to be underpinned by stronger action and stronger language. But there are many who are fighting that fight for you and me. I'd ask you to support your politicians, your generals, admirals, and air marshals when they speak out in public about defense strategy and military intent. They aren't going to get it right all the time, but they'll be 95% right. So cut them a bit of slack when you find a little hole in their arguments. And I have another task for you. Get informed on this subject. It really matters. But have a critical eye when you read stories that are negative about our future. There's a lot of misinformation in the media. You'll help yourself and your country if you have an outcomes-focused, Spartan spirit mindset when you think about the Western alliance and how we can deal with China. Now, as I do each week, I'm calling out someone that epitomizes the Spartan spirit, and in this case, it's someone who is doing their bit to counter all the naysayers about AUKUS. Peter Jennings has the Spartan spirit. It's apparent in the article he wrote for The Australian called "It's Time to Return Fire Against AUKUS Naysayers." He easily counters the tactical arguments against AUKUS submarines with short and sharp responses. He also addressed the Australian government's failure to be clear on the purpose for AUKUS and the threat Australia is dealing with, China. Jennings' article is to the point, it's an easy read, and most importantly, it's objective and factual in countering the many negatively minded people who have been throwing stones without offering sensible alternatives. Bravo, Peter. And on that note, we've come to the end of today's Spartan Spirit Best for the West podcast. We managed to discuss all the facets of the AUKUS partnership, the pros and cons, and the impact of misinformation in the media. Next time we meet, I'll be discussing the Australian nuclear submarine program. You can find the Spartan Spirit on all the usual podcast hosting platforms. If you like the show, please share it with a friend, and be sure to check out my blogs and the podcast notes on spartanspirit.au. That's all one word, spartanspirit.au. Or join us on our Facebook page. Thanks for listening.